So last Friday evening, Christopher Long was riding down 7th Avenue near Times Square in the monthly bike rally known as Critical Mass. Officer Patrick Pogan saw him riding erratically, he says, and decided to protect the public from Long's dangerous path. Since then, a video taken by a bystander emerged on YouTube, and it seems to show a totally different story. If you haven't seen the video yet of Officer Pogan taking down Christopher Long, you should see it on our website, WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. We have the link right there on our page. This is what Mayor Bloomberg had to say about it.
From what you could see on the video, it looked to me to be totally over the top and inappropriate.
Now, Officer Pogan has been put on desk duty until the investigation is resolved. But in the meantime, Mayor Bloomberg is also calling for an investigation into whether the critical mass ride itself Friday night was illegal. New York Times reporter Jim Dwyer joins us today to look at this antagonism between the critical mass bicycle riders and the Bloomberg administration and the NYPD. Jim, welcome back to WNYC.
Morning, Brian.
First of all, what's your reaction to this video? It certainly looks, and I realize a video can lack context of what became of what came before or what might have come outside the view of the lens, but it certainly looked like this bike rider was coming down the street and trying to avoid the police officer, swerve around the police officer, and the police officer ran up to him and shoved him off his bike onto the sidewalk.
That's how it looked like to me. My reaction to the video is, I guess, you know, viscerally like everyone else. It seems like this is a crazy thing to do. He could have badly hurt the bike rider. He knocked him onto the sidewalk in Times Square, and at 9:30 on a Friday evening, it's a pretty busy place. So you could have had a lot of other people injured besides the bike rider, even if the bike rider's behavior warranted that kind of force.
His version that the rider was riding erratically, and so he was trying to stop him to protect other people from him, do you give it any possibility of credence?
You can't see the bike rider until sort of he comes into the frame just 2 or 3 seconds before this encounter happens. But everything else that the police officers said about what happened is untrue. So I'm not sure why that particular that you can tell from the video.
Right. There are other things on his written report that seem to have already been disproven by the video once it surfaced.
That's right. The officer said that Christopher Long drove the bike directly into him, steered it into him, knocked him down, caused the officer to have cuts, and that he was swerving from in and out of traffic. There doesn't appear to be any traffic on the street. The officer never lost his footing. It was only Long who went flying, and there's no sign that the officer ever fell down from this.
And you know what's interesting about this to me? I mean, there could always be the one bad apple, as they say, but this comes in an environment where critical mass feels that the NYPD is institutionally hostile to them. So even if this was an act of police brutality, it raises a larger question of, you know, does that stem from a culture of hostility to critical mass, or is it just this one guy?
I don't want to make a generalization about what everyone in the NYPD feels about critical mass and vice versa. There are serious questions that, you know, uninterested parties would ask about both critical mass and the NYPD.
And that's what we're here to do. So we will do that on both sides. But
yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, you know, I mean, for sure, this crazy war that has gone on now for 4 years between the NYPD and critical mass has been escalated. And sometimes, you know, actually some of the air has gone out of the fight in the last year or so. But we at one point, you know, we're seeing helicopters chasing these bike riders from overhead, and you had SUVs driving up on the sidewalk chasing them. There was a police vehicle that chased some of the critical mass riders along the West Side bike path, which is really wild. At the same time, you have critical mass.
You mean the car? The police car got up on the bike path?
Yeah. We ran video of that a year or two ago. So you know, you think about that old saying that mothers used to tell their kids, to stop running around. Somebody's going to lose an eye, and somebody is going to lose an eye one of these days with this escalating tactics. And I don't want to sound like the weight of this is entirely on the police. And certainly critical mass is not, on the other hand, using helicopters, and they're not using SUVs to counteract. But there's a game of cat and mouse that's been going on, and everyone knows it.
And so I see that we have an organizer. Well, why don't I just put him on? This is Bill in Manhattan, who says he's the director of the group that organizes the critical mass rides, the group called Time's Up. And Bill, thanks a lot for calling in.
No problem. Actually, we just promote the ride, and we try to support people. It's kind of a ride without organizers. But I was actually there, and I actually witnessed this incident.
And the essence of critical mass, I mean, what is it? Because I think the basic thing that the city doesn't like is that you gather 50 bicyclists or more to ride down the street without a permit, without notifying the authorities in advance where you're going to be, where you're going to go. And they say that is inherently disruptive. And if you want to get a big group together to ride bikes together, then you should go through the city and try to get permitted.
Right. And Time's Up, among other groups, are organizing hundreds of group rides that are safe places to people to ride their bike. However, this particular ride happens the last Friday of every month and is seen as more of a celebration. Everybody comes to the ride for a different reason, but the general philosophy, there's no leaders, there's no people in charge, but, there are after events sometimes or different routes people take depending on the strategy of what's happening that night. But it is a peaceful celebration of what our streets can look like. And I sometimes, just like you guys are talking about, it can get strange. Sometimes people do go through red lights, but we feel like people should obey the law, and if they don't, they should be ticketed for what they did wrong, not for some, violation of a light or a bell or scaring people or jumping out of an alleyway and tackling someone. So, there's a system of rules that we have that are not applicable to critical mass, which is strange and scares people. But I also like to add that when a critical mass works or a group bike ride works, it encourages new ridership. And when the critical mass was big in New York City, you saw people borrowing people's bicycles, people riding for the first time that felt safe, and they were getting cheered on by the people on the sidewalk. And then they continued to ride. And that's why one of the reasons why we're seeing more bike lanes in New York City, why we're seeing more bike parking, why we're seeing a different transportation commissioner, because the energy of this event, when it was big years ago, have driven the city to be more bicycle friendly.
Well, you could take some credit for it, maybe, but what do you make of the Bloomberg administration? I mean, you can't say that they're inherently hostile to bicyclists if they're doing all this stuff with new bike lanes, and the transportation commissioner Jeanette Sadiq Khan is as pro bike as she is, and the mayor seems to be behind her. So what do you think it is? You think your group has no responsibility for the antagonistic relationship between you and the NYPD?
No, these changes in the city are great, but how did they really come about? I mean, did the city really just come up one day and say, we're going to be green, we're going to treat bicycles differently, or were they embarrassed by some of their behavior and some of their sustainable thinking?
Well, there's a larger pro-bicycle movement and alternative transportation movement out there, that's bigger than critical mass. But Jim Dwyer, you want to get on this? Do you have any questions for Bill from Time's Up? I'll throw you something here. We're looking at the website for the group, which says critical mass doesn't block traffic. It is traffic.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's there's a lot of language political language Orwell warned us about, and critical, Time's Up and the other groups that are involved with that are associated with critical mass are very careful in describing the ride as a leaderless ride. There's an element of truth to that. There's also, it's not quite a candid description. People do organize ahead of time where they're going to go. There's routes planned out. There's a whole mechanism of communication. Now, whether one would say that's leaderless or not, it's sort of besides the point. But what's been going on in the city as far as alternative transportation goes, and I think is a piece of, you know, critical mass is a voice in that. I think you also have to look at the city does have a very, very ambitious plan for, you know, a more sustainable city in terms of greening up a lot of things in town.
So let me ask Bill.
You know, I think critical mass, though, has become... What's happened with critical mass is that the critical mass rides is that they've become kind of a laboratory for police work, and that is really
What does that mean?
Well, it means that you have spy helicopters flying overhead. You have deployment of, you know, scores and scores of police officers to patrol a ride that can certainly block traffic and be a nuisance, but it's a transient. It can, because people do cork up the side streets. The riders will, members of the group will, or members of the ride will stop. Let's say if they're going down 7th Avenue, a group of them might stop at 46th Street so there's no crosstown traffic coming so that the ride can go through even though it doesn't have the lights.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's been going on for a while. But in response to that, you have this huge deployment of police resources that I think has gone beyond any proportionate need, you know, to have order. I think it's become an exercise in power for power's sake at some point.
Bill, what do you think, before you go, that the NYPD has against critical mass?
You know, I really don't know. I mean, we're just trying to protect people on the ride. And, you know, obviously there's so many lawyers that have come in and work for free. And we have a video team, and we helped secure that video the other day. So we're actually an environmental group. And, you know,
Time's Up is an environmental group, right?
That's right. And we've been pushing for staying. We helped save the community gardens. We've got a lot of people.
Right.
So we're so proud that the city is doing all these green things.
But have you gotten locked into this power for power's sake? You know, arm wrestle with the police, as Jim
sure.
was describing it, doing things like, you know, blocking traffic at 46th Street to make sure the ride can proceed even when you don't have the light?
Sure. I mean, this ride is not really our thing. And, you know, this is kind of a strange thing, but the first time people listen to music, I know I listen to punk music, a lot of people listen to rap music, and now I'm listening to every type of music. So to a new rider, to a young kid, he might want to go on a fun ride for the first time. And it is a little etchy, you know, it's rap music, it's punk, it's rock and roll, and they should obey the laws, but that's not how young people think sometimes. And then later on, they become a commuter, they become someone who gives up their car and rides to work every day. Isn't that worth it? Isn't the original 5 minutes waiting for a bunch of bicycles through worth, you know, the planet in the long run, or the effect of someone actually commuting to work? These people live in a city. They don't have an option to go to a park to ride their bike or a parking lot. They need to get on these group rides. They need to feel safe, and then they could start riding on their own.
Bill from Time's Up, thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
And let's get one more caller in here with New York Times columnist Jim Dwyer, who wrote about that video today of the cop pushing the critical mass rider off his bicycle. Keith in Manhattan, you're on WNYC.
Yeah. Obviously, there's no defending. I mean, that cop is a criminal. He should be thrown in jail for assault and battery. But I think we can agree that the most centrist newspaper in this town is the Daily News. And I think their editorial got it pretty straight yesterday when they said that this group, Critical Mass, they use, I have it in front of me now, call them obnoxious, juvenile, self-important, and self-absorbed, and said that the action by NYPD brass is appropriate. These guys just, they think they're better than everybody else. They're going to block traffic. They're going to grind and make as much noise as possible, just annoy everybody. The cycling horde shrilling and squealing their sense of autonomy away through Times Square. That's a quote. These people are obnoxious. It is not their job to decide for everybody else how people should get to work. If someone's in a rush, if there's an ambulance somewhere, they think they're too important. So, on the smaller issue, obviously this cop is a criminal. on the larger issue, let's not celebrate critical mass. They're obnoxious. Well, look at the Daily News yesterday.
Keith, thank you very much. Now, people may disagree on which is the smaller issue and which is the larger issue. But, Jim Dwyer, what do you think is going to happen to this police officer? I will say that our news department contacted the NYPD spokesman, Paul Brown, as soon as we saw the video and said basically, hey, what about this? And he said that it was the department itself, it was his office itself, that released the video to the Associated Press. So I don't know if that's an indication that they're going to take this very seriously. But what does happen now with this particular officer?
Well, he's a probationary officer, as I understand it. So
he's new?
Yeah, he's very young. I think he's 22 or 23 years old. So I don't think he has very much union protection available to him. So he can be fired at will. And unless, I guess, there's some very, very good reason that no one has yet come up with, that's probably what will happen. The charges will be dismissed against Christopher Long because, you know, it appears he did not assault the cop and he did not, and there was no sign from, at least from the video, that he was disorderly. So then the question becomes, what do you do about people who don't tell the truth when they file complaints under oath? And we've seen a lot of that. I think it's one of the points in my column today is how much this cheap digital technology that's, you know, democratized history, in a sense. Everybody can record what actually happens on the street. And often these written records, the official records, criminal complaints, particularly in mass protests or mass rallies where there are a lot of arrests, don't reflect anything like the reality of what really happened. And that was particularly acute during the 2004 Republican National Convention. There was 1,800 arrests, and hundreds and hundreds of them were thrown out because videotape showed that the people involved weren't doing anything like what they were accused of doing. So you have a challenge sort of before the criminal justice system that's not just from this one case, but from what do you do when you have a fairly significant problem of people not telling the truth in criminal complaints. And so far, the answer has been fairly mild from the district attorney's office, at least. They have not prosecuted anybody for filing false statements or for perjury or anything like that. They said the legal requirements require too much foreknowledge and intent and so forth, and that people can get stuff wrong and not be breaking the law when they tell a story in court. And they have admonish the police department to be sure that officers, when they sign complaints, are really signing complaints about things they actually saw, not that they heard about. So the immediate thing of these two individuals, Christopher Long, I would say it's the rider, 99.9%, he's going to be, the criminal charges are going to be dismissed against him. The police officer will be fired. Christopher Long probably will file a lawsuit, I suppose. And, then the Manhattan district attorney and the police department are going to have to figure out what they're going to do about what really is, I don't know if I would say it's an epidemic, but it's a pretty fast-moving, or at least being fast-exposed, problem of untruthfulness.
And certainly something that appears to be as blatant as this when you see the video and compare it to the report that the officer filed, it certainly is going to raise skepticism about police reports for some time to come. Jim Dwyer, New York Times columnist, thank you very much for joining us.
You're welcome.
That column is in the Metro section of today's New York Times, and you can see the video on the page that we have for this segment on our website. If you haven't seen it yet, go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer Show. Coming up in a minute, are you addicted to your email? A new survey finds that more and more New Yorkers admit that they are.